from WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. This is Sarah Dennis with your WSLR news headlines for Friday, March 28th. One of Governor Ron DeSantis' top priorities in the ongoing legislative session in Tallahassee is limiting citizen-led amendments. The fate of these referendums in Florida now lies with Sarasota State Senator Joe Gruters, who chairs the Senate Fiscal Policy Committee. House Bill 1205 has already passed the House State Affairs Committee, and Senate Bill 7016 is next in line. These bills are drawing strong opposition across the state, with critics saying they would make it harder for citizen petitions to make it to the ballot by limiting collection efforts, increasing penalties, and adding more red tape. The League of Women Voters urged voters to contact Gruters and ask him to oppose the Senate bill. On Tuesday, Manatee County commissioners approved stricter regulations to control dust at development sites. This follows complaints from residents about health issues and property damage caused by dust storms. New rules include limits on land clearing, required dust control plans, and penalties for non-compliance. Despite some improvements, recent windy conditions led to increased complaints. To enhance enforcement, the county will monitor sites more closely, install live feed cameras, and require weekly dust control reports. Commissioners are expected to consider more dust control measures later. Terry Hansen, president and CEO of the Charles and Marjorie Beranjak Foundation, is retiring after leading the foundation since 2015. Under her leadership, the foundation awarded over $170 million in grants and grew its assets to $700 million. She led key initiatives in early childhood education, teacher support, and disaster relief. The foundation received top marks for impact in a 2022 survey. The board will now search for her successor while Hansen remains to assist in the transition. This has been Sarah Dennis with your WSLR news headlines for Friday, March 28th.
Program was pre-recorded in front of an audience of one real live cat. You're listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton, who at the music and arts venue Fogartyville provide a center for creative expression and community engagement that amplifies the voices of our diverse community and promotes peace, sustainability, democracy, and economic and social justice. I am Lou Lorini, and thanks for tuning in to Surreal News, where we offer opinions, comments, and perspective on the events of the week, which do not necessarily represent the station, its board, or anyone else other than the person who expressed them. Whenever I hear El Presidente and his henchman claim, as they always do without any evidence, that many of the federal workers they have fired never worked anyway, I'm reminded of my own work history. I have been an employee, a manager, and an employer slash owner of a small business. It was always clear to me, particularly when I was the boss, how important those who worked for me were to my success. For an organization's leader, either for-profit business or government agency, to deny that all workers are as essential as those at the top is either woefully uninformed, which makes me question their qualifications to lead, or blatantly egotistical, another questionable quality for a so-called leader. but this exaggerated value of the head honcho compared to the rank and file is nothing new. CEOs of most large corporations earn hundreds of times more than the lowest paid employee, which I get. They shoulder the burden of making company-wide decisions that are fraught with risk. But that does not diminish the importance of the lower-level employee's contribution. As is noted in the construction business, nothing gets built without the guy or the girl who puts the nail in the wood. Speaking of consequences of both the disregard for work done by unfairly derided federal workers and the Americans who contributed to their retirement plan, stay tuned until half past the hour to hear my conversation with Linda Benesch, Communications Director for Social Security Works, who explains how hollowing out the Social Security Administration will have an immediate and cruel repercussions for most Americans. But first, hear this story about how a journalist was included in a group chat of cabinet-level officials discussing war plans on an unsecured platform. If a woman or minority had been involved, the blunder would have been blamed on the incompetence of a DEI hire. But since it involved mainly straight white men, I suppose we can assume that they were only hired because of that identity and not expertise. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth disclosed war plans in an encrypted group chat that included a journalist 2 hours before U.S. troops launched attacks against the Houthi militia in Yemen, the White House said this week, confirming an account in the magazine The Atlantic. The editor-in-chief of The Atlantic, Jeffrey Goldberg, wrote in an article published that he was mistakenly added to the text chat on the commercial messaging app Signal by Michael Waltz, the national security advisor. It was an extraordinary breach of American national security intelligence. Not only was the journalist inadvertently included in the group, but the conversation also took place outside the secure government channels that would normally be used for classified and highly sensitive war planning. Mr. Goldberg said he was able to follow the conversation among senior members of President Trump's national security team in the 2 days leading up to the strikes in Yemen. The group also included Vice President J.D. Vance and Secretary of State Marco Rubio, Mr. Goldberg wrote. At 11:45 a.m., March 15th, Mr. Hegseth posted the operational details of forthcoming strikes on Yemen, including information about targets, weapons, and the weapons U.S. would be deploying, and attack sequencing, Mr. Goldberg wrote. The information contained in them, if they had been read by an adversary of the United States, could conceivably have been used to harm American military and intelligence personnel, particularly in the broader Middle East. In an interview, Mr. Goldberg said that up until the Hegseth text on Saturday, it was mainly procedural and policy texting. Then it became war plans, and to be honest, that sent a chill down my spine. Mr. Goldberg did not publish the details of the war plans in his article. Mr. Hegseth, Mr. Goldberg wrote, said that the first detonations in Yemen would be felt 2 hours hence at 1:45 p.m. Eastern Time, so I waited in my car in a supermarket parking lot. If this signal chat was real, I reasoned, Houthi targets would soon be bombed, he added. Around 1:55, initial strikes hit buildings and neighborhoods in and around Sana'a, Yemen's capital. And strikes continued throughout that Saturday into the next few days. Mr. Hegseth, Mr. Goldberg wrote, declared to the group, which included the journalist, that steps had been taken to keep the information secret. We're currently clean on OPSEC, Mr. Hegseth wrote, using the military acronym for Operational Security. Several Defense Department officials expressed shock that Mr. Hegseth had put American war plans into a commercial chat group. Revealing operational war plans before planned strikes could also put American troops directly in harm's way, the officials said. Former national security officials said that if personal cell phones were used in the group chat, the behavior would be even more egregious because of ongoing Chinese hacking efforts. The unanimous response to the president's obsession with tariffs and his economic policy is it's a recipe for recession. So just fire all the experts who will alert the country to what has happened. All signs are pointing to a coming recession as U.S. President Donald Trump imposes tariffs on close trading partners, oversees mass firings of civil servants, and pushes for cuts to public service. But by firing economists, advisors, and other experts tasked with advising the federal agencies on economic shifts, the administration is working to ensure that the government and the public can't read those signs. As Politico reported last week, experts serving at the Bureau of Labor Statistics Technical Advisory Committee were informed this week that they were no longer needed, leaving the BLS without a panel that has long advised the Labor Department on how economic changes can impact data collection. A page for the committee was removed from the Labor Department's website, along with one that had information about the Data Users Advisory Committee, which has advised on how businesses and policymakers can use the agency's economic reports. It would be a bad sign for a software company to cancel all beta testing if you expect to keep making better software, Michael Matowitz, an economist with the Roosevelt Institute who served on the Data Users Committee, told Politico. This feels like the same sort of thing. The dismissal of advisors follows the disbanding by Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick of other advisory boards that worked for years to ensure the government produces accurate data on economic indicators. The Federal Economic Statistics Advisory Board, which worked under the Commerce Department's Bureau of Economic Analysis, reduced transparency in official statistics is perhaps the most troubling aspect of disbanding FESAC, wrote Claudia Sahm, former Federal Reserve economist at Bloomberg on March 11th. Cutting off the agency's staff from external advisors creates an environment where political interference could occur much more easily and go undetected, with political officials such as Lutnick arguing publicly that the GDP should exclude government spending. It is especially important to have external independent experts. Last week, the Federal Housing Finance Authority also placed workers who help compile its home price index on administrative leave. The dismantling of much of the federal government's data analysis apparatus comes amid the illegal firing of two Democratic members of the Federal Trade Commission just after one called on the FTC chair, Andrew Ferguson, to take 10 steps to lower prices for U.S. consumers. The administration wants to write its own narrative, Stephanie Kelton, a professor of economics and public policy at Stony Brook University, told The Nation after the disbanding of FESAC. If laying off tens or hundreds of thousands of federal workers is going to drag down macroeconomic indicators in ways that are unhelpful to them, they're apparently quite willing to just rewrite definitions so they can insulate themselves to the extent possible from the fallout. The latest advisory committee firings this week came as the Federal Reserve projected higher unemployment, faster inflation, and slower growth, or stagflation. Economic growth this year was projected to be 2.1 in the last weeks of former Joe Biden's administration. The Fed now expects 1.7% growth, as well as the unemployment rate rising to 4.4%. Other negative economic indicators include the largest manufacturing decline in nearly 2 years, according to the New York Federal Reserve's Manufacturing Index, and declining consumer confidence, with bars and restaurants reporting their largest sales decline last month since February of 2023. Members of Trump's own administration are increasingly admitting that a recession could be in the near future, but as Lindsay Owens, executive director of the progressive think tank Groundwork Collaborative, said, the Trump administration is testing whether they can prevent a recession with a disappearing act. Unfortunately, tossing a scarf over GDP numbers does not change the fact that their policies have us careening towards a downturn, Owens said. The fact that they are ramping up their obfuscation tactics confirms it. You're listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. Our spring membership drive will run from April 2nd through April 8th, and never has the need for independent voices like those heard on WSLR LP 96.5 FM and WBPV LP 100.1 FM been greater. Current administration may try to control the news by tossing out silly distractions, but listeners can count on us to expose the real damaging agenda, like this story about weakening the IRS. The IRS is bracing for a $500 billion drop in revenue, as increasing number of taxpayers could skip submitting their filings in the wake of the Department of Government Efficiency's layoffs, according to a report. Taxpayer behavior has changed since President Donald Trump took office and implemented sweeping federal cuts through Elon Musk's Doge. As a result, the IRS has noticed an uptick of online chatter from individuals declaring their intention to not pay taxes this year, the Washington Post reports, citing three people with knowledge of the tax projections. It added that individuals were wagering that auditors would not examine their accounts amid Doge's plans to downsize the IRS by nearly 20% by May 15th. New hires in taxpayer services and enforcement divisions have been targeted, and the agency has dropped investigations of high-value corporations and taxpayers, according to the newspaper. The agency employs roughly 90,000 workers total across the U.S., according to IRS data. The Treasury Department and IRS officials are predicting a decrease of more than 10% in tax receipts by April 15th deadline as compared to 2024 filings, which would amount to more than $500 billion in lost revenue, according to the Post. The newspaper said that it spoke with officials who shared non-public IRS data. To put the $500 billion in context, the U.S. military budget was about $820 billion last year. IRS officials reportedly tried to warn the incoming Trump administration about Doge's planned staffing cuts in January. Aggressive reductions in budget and personnel capacity risk backlogs, delays, reduced receipts, and diminished capacity to build next-generation digital capabilities. The presentation seen by the Post given to tax officials to Trump's incoming Treasury Department team said. Experts warned against reducing the IRS workforce earlier this month. Former IRS commissioners said it would render the IRS dysfunctional in an op-ed for the New York Times. Aggressive reductions in IRS's resources will only render our government less effective and less efficient in collecting the taxes Congress has imposed, the former IRS commissioners said. There could be other factors at play contributing to the possible drop in revenue, including Los Angeles wildfires. Taxpayers in wealthy areas affected by the fires could postpone filing till October. Timar Atali, CEO of Tax Prep Service FileYourTaxes.com, told the Post. Some taxpayers may also opt for a penalty-free six-month filing extension during times of economic uncertainty. Neither of these account for the $500 billion drop in revenue, however, experts told the newspaper. Finding a cure for cancer or other killer diseases is just not what government should support with your precious taxpayer dollars, according to some. Ann Morgan Giroux is pretty sure the cure for epilepsy, or at least a long-term solution for millions, is sitting in a university lab in Madison, Wisconsin. She and a team of researchers just need $3.3 million to push it across the finish line. The problem? That $3.3 million solution is on indefinite hold as President Donald Trump and his administration slashes government spending. The money would have been awarded as grants from the National Institutes of Health to launch human trials. Epilepsy affects about 1% of U.S. adults, or around 3 million people. The halt of that epilepsy research is a story being repeated thousands of times nationally as university scientists face the loss of federal funding under new Trump priorities. The cuts will make the country sicker and poorer as healthcare costs rise without new treatments for obesity, diabetes, cancer, autism, and aging, among many other diseases researchers, patients, family members, and entrepreneurs have told USA Today. The NIH is the world's largest funder of medical research, accounting for about 1% of the overall federal budget. When you have a kid with epilepsy and you see this kind of holy grail, this potential treatment is sitting there within grasp, but yet now unattainable, it's frustrating, said Giroux. We're so close to a finish line and we have the research just sitting there is unbearable. Giroux's now adult daughter was born with epilepsy, and with the help of annual community luau's, her family helped raise more than $1 million to pay for the initial experimental research that put scientists on the trail of this new treatment. Avatar Rupra, the University of Wisconsin-Madison researcher who runs the lab developing the treatment, said many breakthroughs happen because people like Giroux foot the bill for highly experimental work, which then demonstrates enough success to earn NIH funding. With these cuts, that pipeline is going to be severed at the university level, he said. Companies are not going to take on the risk of decades-long research without a financial return. Rupra said he worries that the funding delay of even a few months will prompt this research assistant and lab manager to seek new jobs, costing Rupra lab decades of experience and expertise. A federal judge earlier this month blocked the Trump administration from cutting NIH funding, but researchers say the money has not yet begun flowing again. Even if we get a whole new crop of people next year, we will have lost decades of generational knowledge, Rupra said. Trump has halted some of the existing research funding administered by universities while Congress is considering long-term cuts to the National Institutes of Health grants, which typically fund about $48 billion worth of research annually at 2,500 universities, medical schools, and other research institutions. Essentially halting NIH funding, Giroux said, seems like a foolish approach. If you're upset about people speeding down the interstate, you don't simply close the highway. The so-called hoax that is climate change is continuing to melt glaciers. Glaciers around the globe are disappearing faster than ever, with the last three-year period seeing the largest glacial mass loss on record, according to UNESCO report released last week. The 9,000 gigatons of ice lost from glaciers since 1975 are roughly the equivalent to an ice block the size of Germany with a thickness of 25 meters, Michael Zepp, director of the Switzerland-based World Glacier Monitoring Service, said during a news conference announcing the report at the UN headquarters in Geneva. The dramatic ice loss from the Arctic to the Alps, from South America to the Tibetan Plateau, is expected to accelerate as climate change, caused by the burning of fossil fuels, pushes global temperatures higher. This would likely exacerbate economic, environmental, and social problems across the world as sea levels rise and these key water sources dwindle. The report coincides with UNESCO summit in Paris, making the first World Day for Glaciers, urging global protection to protect glaciers around the world. Zemp said that 5 of the last 6 years registered the largest losses, with glaciers losing 450 gigatons of mass in 2024 alone. The accelerated loss has made mountain glaciers one of the largest contributors to sea level rise, putting millions at risk of devastating floods and damaging water routes that billions of people depend on for hydroelectric energy and agriculture. Stefan Uhlenbrook, the director of water and cryosphere at the World Meteorological Organization, said that about 275,000 glaciers remain globally, which, along with the Antarctic and Greenland ice sheets, comprise about 70% of the world's fresh water. We need to advance our scientific knowledge. We need to advance through better observing systems, through better forecasts and better early warning systems for the planet and the people, Uhlenbrook said. About 1.1 billion people live in mountainside communities, which suffer the most immediate impacts of glacier loss due to the increasing risks with natural hazards and unreliable water sources. The remote locations and difficult terrains also make cheap fixes difficult to come by. Rising temperatures are expected to worsen droughts in areas that rely on snowpack for fresh water, while increasing both severity and frequency of hazards like avalanches, landslides, flash floods, and glacial lake outburst floods. One Peruvian farmer living downstream of a retreating glacier has taken the issue to court, suing German energy giant RWE for a portion of the glacial lake's flood defenses proportionate to its historic global emissions. The changes we see in the field are literally heartbreaking, glaciologists Heidi Silvestri, secretariat at the Arctic Monitoring and Assessment Program, told Reuters outside the UNESCO headquarters in Paris last week. Between 2000 and 2023, melting mountain glaciers have caused 18 millimeters of global sea rise, about 1 millimeter per year. Every millimeter can expose up to 300,000 people to annual flooding, according to the World Glacier Monitoring Service. The quirky Vermont library that straddles the border with Canada and was once a symbol of our friendship has fallen to the made-up animosity. U.S. Homeland Security Department officials are closing off Canadian access to an unusual library in northern Vermont that straddles the international border. The Haskell Free Library and Opera House's main entrance is on the Vermont village of Derby Line, but for decades Canadians have been allowed to visit the facility through a side entrance from Stansted, Quebec, without going through border controls. New rules from the U.S. government mean library officials must, as of Monday, limit access via the Canadian side to staff and people with disabilities. As a prelude to closing it off entirely later this year, library officials told USA Today. Borders are not what they were, but this is taking away the uniqueness, said library board member Sonia DiPaolo, who lives on the Canadian side. It's disturbing because the whole purpose of this establishment was to have this wonderful, friendly relationship with our neighbors. The library has long hosted cross-border events, from art shows to school trips and opera performances, and offers books in both English and French, the official language of the province of Quebec. Federal officials say the library, where the border is marked by black tape on the floor, has occasionally helped people break border laws. In 2018, a Canadian man pleaded guilty to transporting handguns north of the border by hiding them in library trash cans. The Trump administration is expected to enact a travel ban that would limit travel between the U.S. and more than a dozen countries. During the first Trump administration, when a similar ban was enacted, affected families sometimes reunited with loved ones amid the books and the old woodwork. Before 9/11, residents of the conjoined towns could move relatively unimpeded over the border, but President George W. Bush ordered stricter separation between the two as the U.S. ramped up security. The Haskell Library remained exempt, although U.S. border agents closely monitored who entered and left the library via the side door and sidewalk. U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem visited the library earlier this year. You're listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. Up next is my conversation with Linda Benesch, Communications Director for Social Security Works, which is another example of the value of independent media. Help us be louder than ever by making a donation during our spring membership drive, which takes place Wednesday, April 2nd through Thursday, April 8th. Donate online at WSLR.org or call us at 941-894-6469. WSLR and Fogartyville, stronger together, louder than ever.
I'm Lou Larinian. I'm happy to welcome Linda Benesch, Communications Director for Social Security Works. His mission is to protect and expand Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, lower drug prices, ensure economic justice for all, and guarantee health care as a human right because everybody deserves to live in dignity. Thanks for coming on, Linda. How you doing?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm busy, and yeah. I wish that I was coming on in happier times, but I appreciate you having me.
Yeah. Tell us just a little bit about the beginnings of Social Security Works, in case people don't know about, that nonprofit advocacy group.
Sure. So we were founded about 15 years ago now, at a time when there was a lot of talk about, bipartisanship, that Republicans and Democrats should go behind closed doors and basically come out with a package that included Social Security cuts. And we were created to be the voice of, working people and say, wait a minute, maybe, especially at the time, there's a bipartisan consensus about this in Washington, D.C., but around the country, the bipartisan agreement is actually very different. It's that Democratic, Republican, and independent voters all agree that there should be no cuts to Social Security and that benefits should, in fact, be increased. And so in the last 15 years, there's really been a lot of movement on that, especially in the Democratic Party, which is pretty unified now from moderates to progressives against cuts to Social Security, and with many Democrats even supporting expanding benefits. And then during that time, even the Republicans stopped talking as much about Social Security cuts because they knew how unpopular it was with their own voters. They really wanted Democratic fingerprints on the gun, so to speak. And so when Democrats started saying no cuts, Republicans were shying away from it, too. And Donald Trump even pioneered that, ran for president both times on a promise that he wouldn't touch Social Security and Medicare. But then now what we're seeing is that instead of going through the legislative front door, under Elon Musk's DOGE, they're really waging a backdoor assault on Social Security by making it impossible to get benefits instead.
Yeah, Elon Musk has even, likened it to an illegal Ponzi scheme, which is crazy. Why is this allegation just plain wrong? Tell folks a little bit about where Social Security funding comes from and how it is not a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah, so a Ponzi scheme, illegal, that would be somebody taking people's money with no intent to actually pay it back. And that's not what Social Security is at all. Social Security, it's an earned benefit. Pretty much all of us pay in, and we all get benefits when we retire, become disabled, or if a family loses a loved one and needs survivor benefits. And so this is very much, it's insurance, it's all Americans coming together to support all of us and the times that we need it, and it replaces wages once people are not able to earn it themselves. So very, very different from a Ponzi scheme. It's a government-packed social insurance program backed by the full faith and trust of the United States, and in over almost 90 years up until now, it's never missed a payment.
Yeah, so what are they doing coming in the back door? Elon Musk and his Doge crew. Now that, and we'll talk about the new guy that's been recommended for the post, but the current acting commissioner, what's he done to Social Security Administration? Eliminating fraud, waste, and abuse, and I say that in quotes.
Yes, so about a month and a half ago, the acting commissioner of the Social Security Administration, who was a 30-year civil servant. She had worked well with Democratic and Republican presidents, was suddenly forced out. And it came out that the reason for that had been that DOGE operatives came into the Social Security Administration and demanded access to the American people's personal Social Security data. And she said, no, I'm not going to let you see that. And so she was pushed out. And then they overlooked like about over 100 more senior people to install a fellow named Leland Dudek, who had already expressed sympathy with DOGE on social media and, in fact, had been put on administrative leave by his superiors for it. And they plucked him off administrative leave, put him in charge of Social Security, and he promptly handed over our personal data, the American people's private Social Security information, to DOGE. And then he's been doing their bidding ever since. They're the ones really running the show. As they're preparing to close field offices around the country, as they've pushed out almost 3,000 staff at an agency that was already understaffed and under-resourced prior. As people with a collective, hundreds of years of institutional expertise have left Social Security, the people who knew how to do things like maintain the website, answer people's questions, and even potentially the people who make sure that the checks go out on time. So we're in a really scary moment.
Yeah, isn't it true that, before all this, malicious fiddling started, Social Security actually, was a pretty efficient operation, not spending a very, very small percentage of whatever it got for, administration. The money that came in, and I just have to say, from my own point of view, knowing the, numbers, and this, I guess, response to the Ponzi scheme, I don't know of any Ponzi schemes where, the money that you put in is like multiplied, when you get the payout. Most people get way more money than they ever put in their paycheck, in benefits. Correct?
People certainly, they get the benefits that they've earned. And Social Security, 99 cents out of every dollar that you put into Social Security gets paid out in benefits. And only less than a penny is used in the administration of the program. So that's far more efficient than any private sector retirement program. And in fact, one of the things that we suspect might be going on is that they want to privatize parts of the Social Security Administration and basically have a Wall Street firm, maybe even the one that the nominee for commissioner was the CEO of until recently, be in charge of some of those functions instead. And you better believe that Wall Street will be taking a lot more than a penny on the dollar.
Yeah, also, this whole business of, privatizing, people have to realize, we need to be clear, Social Security, as Al Gore famously said, is in a box, in a lockbox. It's separate from the deficit. It's got its own funding stream, but it also has a surplus, and it seems to me that, if they privatize it, somebody is going to have access to nearly $3 trillion. This is the surplus now. I think it's like $2.7 trillion is the surplus in Social Security right now.
Yeah, that's about right. And, it's exactly, these people, they say lies that Social Security is part of the deficit. It's not. And, they tell you that we can't afford it. And the truth is that they're the same people who want to give these huge tax handouts to billionaires like Elon Musk. And the truth is that Elon Musk is done paying into Social Security on January 1st. And if people like him paid in on all of their income, then we could easily afford to not just protect but expand Social Security benefits.
Yeah, I guess what's so disturbing about this. Anybody that has, any knowledge of history knows that, and I'm not being partisan, I'm just actually stating a fact, Republicans have been against Social Security since FDR created it. They wanted to get rid of it right from the get-go, and they've been trying to figure out how to get rid of it, and unfortunately, it really works, and it's a great, great program for, close to 70 million Americans right now. Many of them seniors, I believe half of them rely on their Social Security for half their income. I mean, so you know, they tell lies about how it works, right? To try to make people think that it's a bad program.
Yeah, that definitely seems to be a huge part of their strategy right now. You've got Elon Musk, as you said, like telling the lie that it's a Ponzi scheme. There's this ridiculous notion that 150-year-olds are getting benefits, which that's not true at all. And there have been reports disproving that from the Social Security Inspector General, who is the internal watchdog who prevents fraud, who, by the way, Donald Trump and Elon Musk fired pretty much as soon as they came into power. And, yeah, none of this is true, but it seems to be designed to try to undermine people's confidence in Social Security and trust in the system. But, you know, I think that they're also really underestimating, in a lot of ways, the American people and the popularity of Social Security. I mean, we just recently saw the Commerce Secretary, billionaire Howard Lutnick, say that his mother-in-law would not complain if she missed a Social Security check, and that the only people who would are fraudsters. So, like, it really doesn't seem like he's got a, you know, working person in his life. And if that's what they're banking on, they're dead wrong.
Yeah, I think so. I think so too. And I mean, I have to believe, you know, there are some signs already. You know, like the midterms can't come soon enough, I guess, as far as some of us feel. You know, here in Florida, you know, because I am speaking to you from Florida, there is going to be a special election in, like, one of the reddest part of the states to replace one of the most MAGA of our very MAGA congressional delegation, Matt Gaetz. And it's getting close. It's looking like even in that district, the Trump guy could conceivably lose, you know, and I personally – I'm not an expert on this, but I have to think that, you know, this business with Social Security is starting to affect their popularity already at the polls.
Yeah, we're starting to see polling too that bears that out, that Trump and Musk's popularity among older voters has been going down a lot just over the last month, as well as, you know, we see it when we go around the country. So our executive director, Alex Lawson, was just in Florida holding rallies in several parts of the state, including where that special election is. But he also had a really big turnout for a town hall in the Villages, which is the nation's largest retirement community with a reputation for being very Republican. But what he found is even there, people are hopping mad about this.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, and they aren't helping their cause much. Like, and you brought it up. I just want to refer back to it. You know, making these statements, both the president and Musk, about how, you know, there are people on the rolls that are 150 years old. Of course, you know, like, they never say whether they're getting any money. You know, they just say, oh, well, you know, there's these people over 100 years old on the rolls. And, you know, obviously the implication is that there's fraud going on. But, you know, as you and I know, the reason why those people showed up on the list has more to do with, you know, the computer system that they used. And to have corrected it would have cost $8 million, and they decided, nah, that's okay. We kind of know this, what this is, right?
Yeah, that's exactly it. It has to do with the COBOL, which is an older coding language that Social Security uses, and how it categorizes dates. And it seems that these supposed geniuses, computer geniuses at DOGE, like, came in and they didn't know anything about COBOL or understand what they were seeing. So we think that that's where this may have originated. But now Elon Musk and his minions have just double down on this so hard that they're not going to back down. Like, they're determined to just break Social Security rather than admit that they were wrong.
Yeah, you know, I just want to interrupt for a second and remind everybody who is just tuning in, this is WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota, WVPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton, and I'm speaking with Linda Benesch, who is Communications Director for Social Security Works. you know, as we already know, you know, the acting commissioner, Leland Dudick, you know, already released a bunch of sensitive information, you know, to Musk and his minions, you know, and has already done in a very short time, you know, a bit of damage to the, you know, efficiency of the organization. I mean, as of course anybody can read, you know, phones are ringing off the hook. You know, nobody is staffed. You know, they're closing down offices, particularly in rural areas. And it's getting to the point now where I guess you can't confirm your identity even by phone, you know. And if you don't have a computer, you got to go in person, which for a lot of people is an issue, right? I mean, aren't these, like, some serious problems?
Yeah, so that particular change that you mentioned about making people go into these already overcrowded, understaffed offices in person to confirm their identity was supposed to go into effect on March 31st, but we're hearing just today that they're saying that they're actually pushing that change back by 2 weeks. And so, like, that's so part of what's, like, so tough on this for seniors, for everyone who cares about Social Security, is that they keep moving the goalposts and changing things. Even the list of which offices are supposed to be closing around the country is constantly changing. And so it feels like these people are just trying to create chaos and stress for people who need the benefits that they've paid into their whole life and earned. But I will say another way to look at it is that some of the worst changes that they've proposed, they have at times backed down on when it generates enough outrage and media attention. So people's voices do matter, especially calling your Republican members of Congress. That matters because even if they won't publicly criticize Musk and Doge, if their phones are ringing off the hook, a lot of times they're, you know, going behind the scenes and saying, like, hey, like, maybe back off of this. My voters are really angry. And so, you know, my message to your listeners is that your voices do really matter.
Yeah, you know, it seems like, you know, you know, they do have a strategy of, you know, trying to make it so much of a pain in the neck to, you know, get your benefits that you'll just give up. But I don't think that's a viable strategy. You know, I don't know too many people that would just bail because, you know, they couldn't make it to their office. You know, they would be saddened not to get that benefit that they earned and paid for. But I think that's kind of cruel, you know, basically. But then again, why am I not surprised? That seems to be the way this guy, and I'm talking about President Trump, works. You know, there is a little touch of cruelty in almost everything he does, it seems. So, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I would completely agree that what this is going to result in primarily is just a lot more stress for people, hours waiting on the phone, waiting online at field offices in all kinds of weather conditions, long lines out the door, driving hundreds of miles from your home to get to a field office. And, you know, this is affecting seniors and people with disabilities, who are some of the people in our country who are at least able to do that. And so, I agree with you that, you know, the vast majority of people, like, are going to find ways to get the benefits that they've earned come hell or high water. But what this is going to do is make it much harder for them. And there may be some cases for people who are disabled, have dementia, you know, don't have access to the internet or someone who can help them, where unfortunately this could actually block them from getting their benefits. And then the other thing that, you know, we don't know yet if it's going to happen, but that unfortunately is a real concern, is that, like, that they could actually miss payments, at least for some people, and that people, you know, in a month or two just might not get their checks. And so that's the nightmare scenario that Martin O'Malley, who was the Social Security Commissioner under Biden, has been raising alarm bells about, and that unfortunately we think that Social Security has lost so many, so much expertise, so many important people, that it's not out of the question.
You know, and it is important to remember too, you know, that we aren't talking about a handful of people out of the roughly 70 million people that receive benefits from the Social Security Administration. Half of those rely on that money, mostly seniors, for more than half of their income. So to miss a couple checks is a big deal. know.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And then something else that raised alarm bells was, like I had mentioned earlier, Howard Zutnick, the Commerce Secretary, talking about a hypothetical scenario where people do miss a check. And, you know, it makes one wonder, what does he know is coming?
Yeah, that's right. And oh yeah, Howard Lutnick, you know, your mother-in-law may not care about her Social Security benefit because, you know, her daughter married a multi-zillionaire and hopefully he's taking care of you. But, we all don't have access to that kind of largesse. You know, another common claim or charge about Social Security is that it's always on the verge of bankruptcy, you know, and that's flat out not true, too, right?
Yeah, no, that's exactly, you know, like I was saying earlier, it's all about Elon Musk and, his fellow billionaires are paying in their fair share, and right now they're not. So Social Security, it's not going bankrupt or broke. It faces a modest funding shortfall about 10 years from now, where if Congress were to do nothing, benefits would be cut by around 18%. And what we as Social Security Works have been fighting for a long time is for Congress to address that funding shortfall by making Elon Musk and his fellow billionaires pay into Social Security all year long on all of their income, just like the rest of us.
Yeah, you know, and that, you know, I mean, just to, you know, make it clear to anybody who's listening what that is, you know, the limited is $160,200. After you've earned that much in a year, you know, then you no longer have to pay into Social Security. But, you know, just think about that. You know, I mean, if somebody is making $160,000 in, like, well, in Elon Musk's case, probably the first minute of the new year, can't they afford to kick a little bit in to help people out? You know, I mean, that's insane. That's a benefit that's going to somebody who doesn't truly deserve it and taken away from those that really need it, seems to me.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
You know, so, you know, I would hope that, well, you know, like I was saying before, I mean, it seems like, you know, this is in fact, and it has been rightly so called, the third rail of politics, because trying to monkey with it is electoral suicide. And, you know, we do have, you know, elections coming up, you know, can't be sooner, you know, than later. But, you know, hopefully the writing will be on the wall, because, you know, and this is a little off track, you know, Trump's power comes from Republicans believing that he will get them elected or give them power because the people are behind him. Well, I get a feeling this little move might be, you know, finally something that opens people's eyes. I mean, and that's the only good thing I could see about it, because it's really a terrible situation for many, many people, you know, so.
Yeah, that's right. These are, you know, billionaires. They don't know who they're messing with. And they don't understand Social Security. They hate it, but the American people love it. And they are damn well not going to let a bunch of politicians in Washington take it away from them.
Great. Well, you know, on that note, you know, I want to thank you, Linda Benesch, you know, Communications Director for Social Security Works, for making time for us today. And please tell my listeners they can learn more about this important issue and keep up with all the turns by going to your website, right?
Yes. Yeah, so our main website is at socialsecurityworks.org, and we'll be posting updates there, as well as we're on, you know, Facebook, Twitter, Blue Sky, and we're posting updates there every day. But in particular, the number one place I would encourage your listeners to go is handsoffsocialsecurity.org, which is a microsite that we've created where people can find out if there are any demonstrations at Social Security offices happening near them. And if not, they can plan their own and put it on a map that we have on that website. And it's also got a toolkit with information about how to plan a protest. We've got rally signs that you can print We've got a flyer that you can hand out either at rallies or at your local senior centers explaining what's happening. So those resources are there for you all.
Yeah, and I won't ask you to name them all, but, there are some protests already scheduled, for the coming weeks, I would assume.
Yeah, so some of them are timed for this broader April 5th mobilization that is happening around Social Security, as well as all the other important things that Donald Trump and Elon Musk are trying to take away from us. So it's hands-off Social Security, hands-off Medicaid, hands-off healthcare, as well as many other issues. And so we're definitely making sure that Social Security is a big part of those rallies and planning some of our own on that day. But then many of them are also happening both before and afterwards. So I would definitely encourage people to go to handsoffsocialsecurity.org and check it out.
Great. Thanks again, Linda Benesch, for making time for us today. You have a great day.
Of course. You too.
In another attempted erosion of the rule of law, lawyers are being attacked for doing their jobs. President Donald Trump directed the Justice Department to investigate frivolous lawsuits against the administration, but some lawyers say he's trying to intimidate them and attack the rule of law. Trump cited rampant fraud and meritless claim in immigration cases in a memo Friday to Attorney General Pam Bondi and Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem. And he specifically criticized lawyer Mark Elias for representing his rival, Democrat Hillary Clinton, in 2016 when a dossier of derogatory information was gathered about Trump. Trump directed Bondi to seek sanctions against lawyers who engage in frivolous, unreasonable, and vexatious litigation against the United States. And if she identifies misconduct by lawyers, Trump said he could terminate their security clearances and government contracts. Several lawyers, including Elias, responded that they wouldn't be intimidated from fighting for democracy. President Trump's goal is clear. He wants lawyers and law firms to capitulate and cower until there is no one left to oppose his administration in court, Elias said. The clash is the latest legal dispute between Trump and legal forces. He contends are arrayed against him. Trump suspended the security clearances of firms that worked against him in the 2016 presidential campaign. Trump and his billionaire advisor Elon Musk have called for the impeachment of judges who have blocked his latest policies. In an unusual step, U.S. United States Chief Justice John Roberts last week rebuked their call for impeachments. In other actions, Trump revoked security clearances of staffers at the law firm Perkins Coie for working with Clinton. The firm is fighting in court to keep it at the access of lawyers to federal buildings. And the law firm of Paul Weiss agreed to perform $40 million worth in free legal work on mutually agreed projects in exchange for Trump withdrawing an executive order targeting the law firm's contracts and employee security clearances. Trump said grossly unethical misconduct are far too common, accusing Elias of trying to alter the outcome of the 2016 election through fraud. Elias often represents Democratic interests in challenging Republican election rules and policies he contends are aimed at discouraging voter turnout. Trump accused immigration lawyers of coaching clients to lie about their circumstances when they're asserting asylum claims. Trump has made strict enforcement of immigration laws a keystone of his administration. The law firm Kiker Van Est and Peters recently sued the Department of Homeland Security, Customs and Border Protection, and the Border Patrol on behalf of United Farm Workers and residents of Kern County, California. The lawsuit alleges that more than 40 clients were unlawfully deported to Mexico. Lawyers John Kiker, Robert Van Nest, Elliot Peters, and Laurie Carr Mims issued a joint statement saying that the president and attorney general don't understand the country's constitution and bedrock values. An attack on lawyers who perform this work is inexcusable and despicable, the statement said. Our profession owes every client zealous legal representation without fair retribution, regardless of their political affiliation or ability to pay. You're listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Brady.